Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Banton. Along with me on this journey of revisiting 80s movies is my co-host, Jason Masick. Hello, Jason.
I can always go back to whiskey. It's been very good to me. I mean, you're sitting in it and I'm wearing it, but it's tired, you know, it's just kind of run on. All of a sudden you appear on the scene and I'm jumping again. You remind me that money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
That's right, listeners. We are discussing, with spoilers aplenty, the 1986 pool hustling drama, The Color of Money, produced by Touchstone Pictures and Silver Screen Pictures 2, and distributed by Buena Vista Distribution. It stars Paul Newman, Tom Cruise, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. Directed by Martin Scorsese, this movie is rated R with a running time of 1 hour and 59 minutes. The movie was nominated for 4 Oscars, winning one for Paul Newman for lead actor and nominations for Best Supporting Actress, screenplay based on material from another medium, and art direction. It is the sequel to the 1961 Oscar-winning movie The Hustler, which starred Paul Newman, Piper Laurie, George C. Scott, and Jackie Gleason. It is also based on the 1984 novel of the same name written by Walter Tevis. So, what is this movie about? What's on the box? If you grew up in the 1980s and went to your local video store to rent this movie, you would find this description on the back of the VHS box. It is What's on the Box? Take it away, Jason.
Paul Newman, one of Hollywood's greatest stars, and Tom Cruise, one of its hottest new talents, ignite the screen in this powerful drama. Brilliantly directed by Martin Scorsese, Newman recreates one of his most memorable roles from The Hustler. As Fast Eddie Felson, he still believes that money won is twice as sweet as money earned. He forms a profitable yet volatile partnership with Vince Cruise, a young pool hustler with a sexy, tough-talking girlfriend, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. The Color of Money will electrify you with its suspenseful story, dazzling cinematography, and dynamic performances.
Color of Money. Jason, how are we doing?
Doing great, man. I can't wait to talk about this movie from 1986. Let's get into some hustling.
Yeah, I'm hitting the pool hall after we finish recording this.
Oh, you just want to after watching this movie, don't you?
Yeah. All right, so let's move into earliest memories. Jason, what are your earliest memories of The Color of Money?
Yeah, let's get right into it. I did not see this in the movie theater. I watched this probably somewhat after 1986. And honestly, when I finally did see it, I can't say I fully understood the nuance until I would get older. And I would get older and I would watch this many more times. Now, that being said, I knew I liked it when I initially watched it, and I would say it was probably most likely in my college years when I first watched it from beginning to end. And even then, I'm not sure I could unpack all of it. However, there was just a feel about it, a sexiness, a style, a thrill, a gamble, a risk, a lifestyle, the lifestyle of a pool hustler. Man, the look and feel, the smell of the pool halls. I mean, it's just a sensory overload. And of course, Scorsese's direction. That's something I've always liked. I found myself watching this multiple times over the years, mainly on cable. But I remember that this is a movie that's grown on me more and more over the years. It feels like a mature film, not just because it has a mature character at the center in Eddie Felsen, played by Paul Newman, but it feels maturely made. And the more mature I've become, I see the movie as it does deal with getting older. Now, it's about this character that's, you know, looking back upon better times, trying to recreate better times, even trying to live vicariously through someone younger, and either making the choice to be bitter and to wallow in the past or the loss of one's younger self, or to ultimately come to a point of acceptance and reinvent yourself within your present state of being at your current age. I always appreciated this idea of an older man sort of having made the decision to hang it up, having some regrets, not really happy about the choices he's made, and then finding this inspiration and reinvigoration in training a protege, but realizing it's actually skirting around this real problem, which is that he's not happy because he's not the one actually playing, and he has to make a decision to play pool again because he can. And that's what makes him truly happy, because that's what drives him. He knows he can still be great, even though he's maybe lost a little bit of an edge. Now, I do, of course, remember Tom Cruise playing this flaky, over-the-top machismo, this cocky, up-and-coming pool shark who has tremendous insecurity, especially with his relationship to Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio's character, Carmen, and how she was hot and manipulative and street smarts, and the one wearing the pants in the relationship. And man, I mean, I'm going to gush about Paul Newman this entire time. I'm just a big fan. I always have been. He's just the coolest. That's it, ladies and gents. Paul Newman. He's the wise old man in this film. He's the guy you look at and you just know he's been there. He's done it. He's most likely got all the advice and all the answers. He's that guy that no matter how old he gets, he just effortlessly exudes cool. And that's what I always remember. That's an early memory of this movie. He just is. He doesn't have to say it. He knows it. And everyone in the room knows it. And he owns it. He owns everybody. There's nothing you can do about it but respect it. I mean, my early memories of this movie are all the pool playing scenes. Yeah. Tom Cruise howling. And the Werewolves of London song. Man, what a great scene. He's just showboating, doing his martial arts display with the pool cue stick. I always remember that. It's probably the first scene I actually think of when I think of this movie. And there's something about watching somebody that's good at pool. I've always liked watching it. It's an art form, like watching a great athlete or anyone with great talent and with great confidence and walking up to the table with their pool cue, knowing their strategy, having the focus and sometimes the flair. It's such a vibe. And I just remember the sounds of this movie, the rack, the break, the stick hitting the ball, the cracking of the balls, the sound of a ball hitting and dropping into a pocket, the sights and smells, or at least what you feel like you can actually smell of these smoky rooms, the dim lights, the cash being exchanged, the tension, the competition. It's so atmospheric. That's what I remember. That's an early memory. It's just, and excuse my French, it's just fucking cool. And Scorsese captures all of that. I remember his visual stylization. There's so many great lines. Mary Elizabeth in her underwear. I remember that. I remember Forrest Whitaker's wonderful appearance, brief, albeit. I look forward to that scene every time. I remember the Balabushka pool cue. And Newman, of course, getting his groove back. I mean, I've always loved this movie. I love recalling my memories of it. And Scorsese kills it with this one. For me, this ranks in the top five, at least, of Scorsese movies of all time. It's just plain cool. Those are my early memories. What about you, Bill Band?
For me, for as long as I can remember, I've always been fascinated by pool, because my great aunt and uncle, we usually go to their house maybe twice a year. And they lived in a ranch house in New Jersey, about 45 minutes away. And my uncle had a pool table in the basement. So it was always, you get to the house, you say hellos to everyone. And then it was, Uncle Bob, can I go in the basement and play pool? And he had the pool table down there, and it always had like this covering. You would take the cover off and you'd take all the balls and you'd rack them up. And when I was really little, I had no idea how to use the cue stick. So it was just, you just take the cue ball in your hand and just whip it down the table as fast as you could. And then when I got older and learned how to use the stick, that was great. But the problem with my uncle's pool table was, on three sides, the table had enough clearing, but for some reason he had it too close to the one wall. So you never wanted to put your cue ball on that one side of the table, because then like you can't hit it. So I just always loved going to their house just because, like, oh, I'm just going to play pool all day. Not that I was any good at it. It was just fun. Smack the balls around, just listen to the sound of that and just having something to do because everyone else is like adult. So it's the cool thing to go down to the basement and play pool. So when this movie came out, I was super excited because I was like, oh my God, there's actually a movie about pool playing. And I had never heard of The Hustler, so I had no idea. This was initially a sequel. And then Eric Clapton's song, It's in the Way You Use It.
Yeah.
Oh, man. On MTV, when that video would come on, I just love that song.
That's so good.
So I know for you, Werewolves of London, you kind of equate that Eric Clapton song. I always equate to this.
Of course.
Movie. So I didn't see it in the theater, but that was definitely a rental. And just watching the playing of pool and just the camera getting up close and those tight shots and just all those amazing shots I could never make at that time. I just loved it. And then after I finished at UM, a couple of friends had rented a house and we had this huge empty room. And I remember saying, I'm like, oh my God, it'd be so great if we got a pool table in this room. And I ended up getting sick and I ended up having to fly home because it was so bad. And when I got back, the rest of the roommates had bought a pool table. Like, we got a surprise for you when you get back. And sure enough, they found a pool table someone was selling for like $150. And the front where all the balls, that board was totally missing. So if you hit the ball in the pocket, the ball is then hit on the floor. So I went and bought like a 2x4 and cut little slots in it and then hammered it in so it would stay on there. So I had my own pool table for a while. I got a little bit better, but there's no way I was going to any kind of local pool hall and hustle. And that's for sure. Makes me miss my pool table at the house or even going to my aunt and uncle's, God rest their souls, missing their pool table there also.
I absolutely love it. You bring up such a great point because growing up, if you knew a friend or a relative had a pool table, you'd never forget it. You'd never forget it. It's one of the first things you'd think of when you went to their house. You would think about it before you went over to their house. Be like, oh yeah, they've got a pool table. That's right. Let's go. And there's just something about the game that is brilliant because it's so alluring. It draws you in. It draws you. It's like there's a magnetic draw that a pool table will actually pull you towards it because you're fascinated by the game. And it's not as if you need some sort of tremendous physical prowess to play the game. It's so mental and it takes such a subtle and delicate touch. And then the strategy that's involved. And that's just on the surface. And that's what's great about this movie is I don't know if I was clearly cognizant or aware of the culture of pool playing and hustling until this movie, if that makes sense. I loved playing the game. And it was always something, like you said, something to do. You're like, hey, you want to play pool? Let's play pool. It's always fun, right? It's always fun.
Yeah.
And you want to get better and you want to learn to be better. But this movie brings it to a whole nother level and introduces so many other elements, which is really cool. And I'll probably get into in my initial thoughts, but thanks for sharing that. Cause I always loved anybody that had a pool table.
Cause that was the thing too. That was really my first introduction to the nine ball too, because always playing was always eight ball.
Mm-hmm.
And another good thing about pool is the only time when you're like geometry, what do I need to know geometry for?
Mm, right. Right.
Pool. That's it. That's the only thing I've been able to use geometry for is pool playing.
Yeah. And learning the just the techniques, right? How to hit the cue ball, where to hit the cue ball, how to hold the pool cue itself.
Yeah.
How to strike it a certain way, too hard, too soft. The stroke itself, playing the angle, hitting the cue ball on a certain side in order to spin it. But you mentioned the quality of the felt, or actually you were talking about, I think, the positioning of the table and being too close to a wall, et cetera, which could often happen. And that was always a pain. When you were talking about that, I immediately thought you were going to talk about the quality of the felt because you get poorly taken care of pool tables and that affects the game. And then you play that table enough where you know the bumps in the felt and you try to avoid those or the rips in the felt, right? It's all those subtleties. It's great stuff, man.
Yeah. Just even learning to hit a cue ball, like, oh, if you hit it on the bottom, it puts a spin on it. So when it hits the other ball, it stays in place. Just learning how to do that, I was like, yes, okay. I've mastered something.
Yeah.
Got a long way to go, but.
Absolutely. I just got to get that one thing down. Get that right. And yeah, the different kinds of pool tables, the ones where you actually would have to go to the pockets and pull the balls out of the pocket.
Right.
They didn't return to the one side of the table. There's a lot of nuance.
Definitely. All right, let's get into initial thoughts. What are your initial thoughts, Jason, seeing this movie again?
Well, as I usually do, or most often do. I start with our director, and of course, I have to briefly mention Martin Scorsese, the one and only, no question, one of our great American directors of cinema. And in the 70s, he was known for Mean Streets and Taxi Driver, amongst others. But in 1980, he directs Raging Bull. And then he himself, of course, becomes all the rage. Then he does The King of Comedy, After Hours. He actually directed an episode of Amazing Stories called Mirror, Mirror. And then it's The Color of Money in 1986. And as you well know, he's been making all-time greats ever since, like Goodfellas, The Departed, The Wolf of Wall Street, among others. Scorsese's 81 years young, and the word on the street is he's got at least one more in him. Maybe two. Who knows? You don't. The guy's just, he's still killing it. Okay, our big star in this movie. There's a few, but we got to talk about Paul Newman, legendary actor, known for HUD, Cool Hand Luke, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, one of the greatest sports movies of all time, Slapshot. Getting into the 80s, we get The Verdict in 1982, which he was nominated for Best Actor for. He did a movie called Harry and Son, and then it's this, Color of Money, which, as Bill Bant mentioned, he wins the Oscar for. Then beyond the 80s, he's known for Hudsucker Proxy, Nobody's Fool, and one of my favorite appearances by Paul Newman has to be Road to Perdition in 2002, which ended up being his last film appearance, as far as I know, as he then passed away from lung cancer a bit later in 2008. That was a big loss. Moving on to Tom Cruise. We all know Tom Cruise. I'm not going to get too deep into Tom Cruise filmography or 80s. I'll just say this. He's coming in red hot off Top Gun, which was released the same year. Are you kidding me? He's 23 years old and made a cool $1 million by doing The Color of Money. Not too shabby, Tom Cruise. And moving on to Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. You know, she was actually an extra in The King of Comedy, directed by Martin Scorsese in 1982. We know her as Gina Montana in Scarface, then this Color of Money, but she was in The January Man and also The Abyss in the 80s and is known for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves after that, The Perfect Storm. She's done a lot of TV work in recent times, and she's now 65 and still doing it. All right, now getting into some other initial thoughts. Man, are you kidding me? This movie just starts off just lying. It's just a banger from the get. The opening narration by Scorsese, you just get this shot that comes up on your screen of this cigarette burning in an ashtray next to like this wax candle. And it's just kind of like silhouetted. It's just awesome. And you hear Scorsese's narration describing the game of nine ball. And he finishes it off with this great line, "For some people, luck itself is an art." And boom, the music kicks in, the main title theme. It's just the coolest, and you know you're in for a cool ride. So, Bill Bant, I'm like 24 minutes into this, and I'm like, this is the best addiction. I can't get enough. Everything's perfect. Newman's playing all the angles, and it's like watching this great magician. I'm lost in his cool blue eyes that can be so warm and inviting, yet turn cold as ice in a moment. He's just so well rehearsed, so well practiced. It all just flows. I can't say enough about Newman. Anyway, I will say more. Scorsese's direction, that camera technique, those angles and push-ins that he's known for, those fast push-ins on characters' faces, the quick swish pan, the style, so many incredible shots like Bill Bant mentioned of the pool halls, the game itself, the balls moving around, the close-ups of the stick hitting the ball, the fantastic shot of Eddie Felsen, that's Newman's character, leaning in to shoot the ball in the classic tournament at the end. I mean, that's such a great shot. Look, here's an initial thought. The movie is not about the game of pool itself as much. You're not going to learn how to play pool watching this movie. It's about the people and the culture, more specifically, Eddie Felsen's arc. Yes, of course, Vincent, played by Tom Cruise, is a main focus, but we don't actually see him change that much. We're told he's matured somewhat by the end, but this is really about Eddie Felsen's journey. And that character of Eddie, it just really hit home on this rewatch, Bill Bant, the fact that Eddie Felsen, he is a hustler. He's not really a great guy. He's manipulating and playing with both Vincent and Carmen throughout this. He's playing his own girlfriend, Janelle, in this. He's flawed. But I see now that he's a man that feels he's past his prime, and now he's got a taste of the magic again and wants to recapture it and get back to it. And that's his real motivation. He wants to get back into this world of hustling. I love the actual Eddie-Carmen relationship of this. We know that Carmen, played by Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, is the girlfriend of Vincent, played by Tom Cruise. However, Eddie gets to know this couple because he's wanting to groom Vincent, but he gets to know Carmen, the girlfriend. And I like their relationship because Eddie has a certain respect for her. She's a hardcore player, not a player of pool, just a player in general. And he even calls her a hard broad and recognizes her game, if you will, and knows she's as much as an important part to this whole thing, to making Vincent the best, because if she's not there, he is going to fall apart. Plays a really important role in this, and I like their relationship. The movie is called The Color of Money, but I can't forget that it is really The Hustler Part 2. It's all about the hustle, right? I know it's obvious, but still. We have a master and a student, and spoiler alert, the student becomes a master, but the movie is about getting the most, man, winning the most money. It's who's got the most. And it's similar into poker that way. You have to know how to play the game, obviously, but more importantly, you got to know how to play the person. And that means manipulation and trickery and acting and playing a part and making moves. Here's an initial thought, Bill Bant. There's a shot of the tournament pool hall, the Nine Ball Classic in Atlantic City when it's completely empty that I drool over. I love that shot of that empty pool hall when Newman's character, Eddie Felsen, goes in just to be by himself in this quiet, empty pool hall where he knows the tournament's about to begin the next morning. And it's just awesome. This whole world is never about anything on the surface. It's all the bets on the side. It's what's going on in your head. It's working a con. That's the real game. And it's, again, all about the money. I was thinking about this, Bill Bant. The obvious problem with Vincent is that he's all surface. Everything about him is on the surface. And so much of this, as we learn, requires subtlety. And he's the exact opposite. There's just not a lot underneath with him. And a credit to Cruz. He stood out for me on this rewatch, to be honest, because he plays this role, this naivete, to a T. I mean, it must have been a case of art imitating life, because he's playing a student of sorts in this movie, but he's 23 in real life, and he's learning from Scorsese, and he's learning from Newman, too, as an actor. So it's pretty cool, and I think he nails this part. All props to the writing. Just a kick-ass script. We know it's based on the novel by Walter Tevis, but credit to Richard Price as well. Props to the sound design. Kick-ass soundtrack. You know, we're going to talk about that. We get that main title by Robbie Robertson and Gil Evans. Phil Collins makes an appearance in the opening with One More Night. Love that tune. Hey, quick shout out to the great John Turturro. He plays a small role in this. He plays the role of Julian, another hustler, a bit of a heel, a whiny weasel. Just the best. Lastly, this movie could be considered part road trip movie because the movie's pacing is a bit like a road trip unto itself. It starts off with a bang and the energy and the excitement of what's to come. Then the film mellows out a bit because it's being on the road and it's all, well, it isn't all that it seems. And there's these tough lessons to be learned, including patience. And then you get to the destination and it's another round of excitement that ends with a bang. One could say it's a great Chicago movie. Much of it was actually shot in and around Chicago. I love this movie. As you may have noticed or heard, I can feel it, taste it, smell it. It puts me inside a mood. And although I'll never be a pool hustler, it makes me want to be one. It makes the world ever so alluring. But I suppose Paul Newman could sell me on anything, to be honest. So those are some initial thoughts. Just some. What are yours, Bill Bant?
Jason, my mind started spinning when you equated pool to poker. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so much the same. And I just started jumping to Rounders. How?
Oh, another great. Yeah.
Yeah. The Color of Money and the Rounders. That's where you really learned about the, I wouldn't say the seedy underside of those competitions or however you want to call it. But yeah, there is a lot of that. I mean, there's really a lot about pool. I just never realized there was all this until watching that movie.
Right. And I think you're right in saying it's seedy. There's some shady stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's not all above board. I mean, come on. That's part of the allure, though. There's a danger that's involved that's really alluring and sexy. You know?
Right, because you think this is just a fun hangout with your friends kind of game. And yeah, there's a really lot more into it than you know going into this movie. And it really shows all that. So that was kind of cool. I'll be honest, at the time when I saw this, I was not a Tom Cruise fan. I always thought Tom Cruise was one note cocky. So going back to this and watching it, you're right. His performance is perfect for this movie because we prepare for these pods and we watch the movie two times, maybe three times at most. I watched this one five times. I just couldn't get enough of it.
That's great.
But it was great because each time I watched it, I picked something out of it that I didn't ever catch before. Mm-hmm. And I know we'll get into this later is when we get into the opening scene and Newman's having the conversation with his girlfriend. I always just kind of like, all right, let's go, let's go, let's go. And then the third time I watched it, and I watched it closed caption, and then saw what the dialogue was. Wow, there's a lot more in this than I was not paying attention to, because I just wanted to get to the pool play. And I think that's really what it was. Like, each time I watched this movie, I kind of picked a scene and just like, all right, let me just really deep dive into it and see what I can get out of it. And I was really gathering more information the more and more I watched. The big thing I got out of it overall is it's almost like you have two parallel stories that all of a sudden crisscross, because you have Tom Cruise as Vincent, who just loves playing pool. Just plays pool and just wants to beat people. That's it. Super simple. And then you have Eddie, Paul Newman, who was a pool hustler, is kind of forced out of the game, where he kind of takes himself out. He played pool to make money. And then by the end of the film, they totally change. All of a sudden, Fast Eddie is back playing pool because he loves pool and just wants to win. Whereas Vincent now wants to make money and hustle. They really do flip-flop by the end of the film. Yeah. And that was like the biggest takeaway I got for it. And then just watching, and you always think about Newman, Cruise, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, but big shout out to Helen Sharver, who plays Janelle, who's Eddie's girlfriend.
Yep.
The more I watched it, the more I got into her character, because she's kind of the pining for Eddie, and Eddie's never making that commitment, but she's just kind of, you know, she hates him, but she loves him, and then she hates him, and then she loves him, and then she's supportive.
Right.
Before, to me, she was just kind of a throwaway character, but upon the continuous rewatches, I really enjoyed her more and more, and I was like, oh, I wish she was in this a little bit more. But at the same time, you kind of don't want that. I understand why you didn't do it. Like, another scene I would love to have seen, I don't necessarily need it in the movie, is when Vincent meets Carmen for the first time. How that, like, Carmen talks about it.
Right.
But I would love to have seen how that played out. But that's not something I need in the movie. I just need to see it. I just love pool. And the fact that this movie just, in a way, glorifies it, sensationalized a little bit. But then there's a seedy side to it also. That's just, I think, just what just makes it fun. And then just going back to finally watching The Hustler afterwards, probably saw it maybe 4 or 5 years after this one had come out. And just to see how that all started was cool too. So the great thing about this movie is you do not have to see the first one. This is standalone. They throw you little tidbits throughout the movie about kind of what happened, but it's standalone. It's a bonus if you see The Hustler first. Jackie Gleason is awesome in it. Jersey Scott is such a dick in that one. So check him out. If you could see, you know, see him in order, Hustler and then Color Money, go for it. But if you just see this one, you're fine. You'll get plenty out of it. So that's my initial thoughts.
So many great thoughts. So much great commentary. Thank you for that, Bill Bandt. And I have to make an admission, even though I am a huge fan of this movie and seen it several times, I've never seen The Hustler. And I know there are listeners probably pulling their hair out or screaming at me right now, being like, how can you be a fan of this and never gone back? And it's one of those weird things. I just have never seen the original. And it also is one of those things where I am making the excuse that I'm leaving it up to my imagination. I love Eddie Felsen as he is in this movie. And I almost just like imagining what he must have been like. But I will definitely go back and watch the film at some point here. But thank you for calling out Helen Shaver. I think it's Shaver who plays Janelle, who is the woman that Eddie Felsen is seeing on and off in this film. And she knows that he's always running a game. She knows who he is. She knows everything that he's about. She plays it great. And it's nuanced. And I wish she was in it more. Is it necessary? I don't know. We may discuss it further. But that can lead right into our, at least my first favorite scene, if we're ready to get into that segment, Bill Bandt.
Let's go. Favorite scenes or moments?
Favorite scenes and moments. Yes, indeed. As always, I love a smart, solid setup, and this one is great. I'm going to start from the beginning. And as Bill Bandt mentioned, it is actually after the opening credits, it's just a shot of, it's like a glass of whiskey and a shot glass, and we hear Paul Newman's voice. And we get this feeling that his character, Eddie Felsen, is a liquor salesman. We just know, we don't get a feeling. We see him in his present role. That's who he is now. He's a liquor salesman. And he's giving his pitch to sell some cheap Old MacDonald bourbon to this bar owner, who we quickly find out is this woman he's been seeing off and on. And her name is Janelle, played, like we said, by Helen Shaver, quite wonderfully. But right from the get, we see that Eddie is this fast talker, a smooth talker, a charmer, a salesman, a hustler. And bam, there it is, man, right away. It's so good. Like you said, Billy, this is like one of these things growing up. I'm not paying attention. Now I'm paying attention. Man, this is smart. He's established right away. And Newman is so freaking confident in his delivery. I'm just like, yeah, man, I'll do a shot with you. Tell me a story, Paul. He's just that convincing. In the midst of Newman, Eddie Felsen, describing the whiskey he's selling at a discount. And by the way, even though it's cheap, the way he describes it makes you want to drink it. He makes this date with Janelle to see her later that night, but in the middle of his cell, he's being tapped on the shoulder by this pesky Julian character played by John Turturro, who's in the midst of playing a game of nine ball in the background. Julian explains in so many words that he's hustling this new kid, Vincent, at $20 a rack, and he needs more money. So we understand that Eddie, even though in the middle of a conversation with Janelle, is now staking Julie in this game. And we also understand quickly that Julian is losing pretty fast to this new kid. So he keeps asking Eddie for more money to put up. Then Eddie finally turns his attention away from Janelle and to the game because he hears what he calls, I believe, what does he say here? A sledgehammer break.
Yep.
As the young Vincent is just smacking that pool cue against the cue ball. And it really gets Eddie's attention. So Eddie decides to go over and see what's going on with this new kid, Vincent, and this game that he's playing with Julian. And Eddie takes a seat behind Carmen. And you know what? It just gets better. This whole opening is seen as fire because it's establishing character. But when Eddie sits behind Carmen, well, I'm just going to let Bill Bant take over from here. I think you got something to say about this part.
I love this moment of that opening scene. Eddie looks over at Carmen, kind of gives her a nod and a smile. And Carmen's like, oh, God, some old guy's hitting on me, or kind of gives him the blow off. And then he sits down and there's like two rows of chairs and she's in the front row and he's in an elevated chair right behind her over her shoulder. And it's great because there's a jacket that's sitting there and she literally takes the jacket and moves it to the other side and puts it down like he's going to run off with her jacket or something. I don't know. It's just, it's pretty funny. So then Eddie's watching Julian play Vincent and he loses again. And Vincent's like, all right, you want to play another game? Julian's like, I'm done. I'm bust. And then that's when Vincent says, let's just play for fun. I just want your best game. Just play. And Julian's total shock. And Eddie's just kind of watching like, what the hell is going on here? Hey, if you win, I'll give you $20. I think the money's throwing you off. Let's just play. And Julian's like, I can't believe this guy. He's like, I got to go. I'm out of here. So Julian takes off. And then Carmen, and it's great. It's a two shot. And the way that Scorsese films it is Eddie's in focus and Carmen's kind of like in a blur. And she turns to him and says, you want to play him? $20 a rack. And Eddie goes $500 a game. Carmen's taken aback. She's like, are you serious? And he pulls out a stack of hundreds and kind of holds it in between the two of them and says, I never kid about money. And Carmen's dumbfounded and she doesn't know what to say. And Eddie picks up on this and the wheels are turning. So he knows what his plan's now going to be from here on out. And he's like, so offer to you again, I'll play him for $500. You don't know what to say, do you? Maybe I'm hustling you. Maybe I'm not. You don't know, but you should know. So if you know that, you know when to say yes. You know when to say no. Everybody goes home in a limousine. And Carmen comes back with, what should I say? Yes or no? And he goes, you should say no. You know why? Because it's too much money and I'm an unknown. He should be the unknown. He puts the money back in his pocket and then kind of explains to her that what you have in front of you is amazing. Like he could beat anybody in here without any trouble whatsoever. And then he goes, I'll offer you again, $500. Yes or no? She goes, no. And he goes, well, that time you should have said yes. And he puts the money back in his pocket and then goes, let me take you guys out to dinner. And Carmen says, well, maybe you should ask Vincent. And Eddie goes, no. You should ask Vincent. And then we move on to the next scene, which I think is one of your favorite scenes now.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into that. But let's just talk about this opening scene because it's great. Newman just owning everybody. You can't keep your eyes off of him. I've never seen anybody so smooth and so confident in his delivery, because just when he's flirting with Janelle and selling the liquor and making that seem so delicious, he's convincing her to see him later that evening. He gets upset when she can't remember the type of omelet he made her in a previous date when they slept together. And it's just like, who is this guy? He's a wordsmith. And I have it here. There's a great line that he delivers. It has something to do with the liquor, but he just says something. Oh, goes, it's just like one of those things that you never think about, but can make your day, like electricity. What a great line. It's great writing. Props to the writers again. But man, his delivery. So for me, this opening scene is just all character establishment. That whole 500 Iraq, you should have said no, you should have said yes, the back and forth. No, you should ask Vincent. You nailed it, Bill Bant. All great stuff. Paul Newman as Eddie Felsen is making moves already. He's making moves. He's manipulating, finessing, massaging. And Tom Cruise as Vincent, like we said, is this young, youthful, bombastic, braggadocious, full of bravado, extremely showy and extremely arrogant character. When you were just talking about how he actually is begging Julian to keep playing, and he offers to actually pay Julian to keep playing, he's rubbing salt in the wound. It is terrible. And the look on Turturro's face as Tom Cruise is delivering those lines is like, are you effing kidding me? Doesn't even say anything, just turns and walks out. It's embarrassing to the utmost. So you're establishing the character. The character of Vincent, in between the pool games he's playing with Julian, he's playing a race car video game called Stalker. What a wonderful touch. His focus isn't even on the pool game or his beautiful girlfriend. He's basically still an adolescent boy who doesn't have any idea about the world or the potential of his own talent. And we see Carmen, Mary Elizabeth, who's just this beautiful, cool, calm, and in control character on the sideline, but she's still young, especially in comparison to the old wily Eddie. So love that character establishment. And at that, the very tail end, Eddie sees what he's got. He's got this thoroughbred right in front of him. And like you said, his wheels are turning. So he says, hey, can I take you guys to dinner? Checks on me. And this goes into my next favorite scene. It's back-to-back favorite scenes for me, because we have Eddie at dinner with Carmen and Vincent. Immediately, you see the generational gap here, because Eddie says, you know, God, like he's actually giving Vincent some props here. He says, you know, the last time Julian lost for me? And Vincent goes directly into saying that, oh, pool's just a game with a stick and balls. It's not that tough. Do you know what's tough is playing the video game Stalker. And Eddie's just looking at him going, oh my God, you're beautiful. Can you make any money playing Stalker? And Vincent just puts, again, his naivete on display. But you see what's great here is that his girlfriend Carmen has her interest tweaked. And she says, what do you mean make real money? And Eddie goes into talking about excellence. If you're excellent at anything, it could be anything. Rich can be arranged. Rich can come fairly easily. He goes on to say to Vincent, you're some piece of work. You're also a natural character. And Vincent replies, you see, I've been telling her that. I got natural character. And Eddie responds, that's not what I said, kid. I said you are a natural character, but you're an incredible flake. But that's a gift. Some guys spend half their lives trying to invent something like that. You walk into a pool room with that go, go, go. The guys will be killing each other trying to get to you. You got that. But I'll tell you something, kiddo. You couldn't find big time if you had a roadmap. And again, credit to Tom Cruise's performance in this. His reaction to Newman calling him a flake, it shuts him up and his face changes. His voice actually gets high and tight. And Newman goes on to say, pool excellence is about becoming a student of human moves. And he can see by Tom Cruise's reaction that he's going to have to prove it. So Newman's got to make a human move here and put on display his excellence in making moves. And thus he points out this guy at the end of the bar in this restaurant. And he says, I'll bet you that guy hitting on the brunette, he's going to give up in 30 seconds and walk out. And he gives Vincent his watch. So Vincent's timing him and the time runs out. But then the guy actually does get up and walk out. But technically, Eddie's lost that first bet. Then he ups the bet and he says, you know what? I can get that brunette to leave the bar with me in under 2 minutes. And of course, Vincent's like, no way. So Eddie gets up, goes to the bar, and we see now Eddie ask the brunette, hey, would you mind do me a favor? I know this sounds weird, but would you go outside with me and take a look at my car? And she obliges, and they're about to walk out of the bar, and Eddie goes back over to Vincent and Carmen still sitting at the table, And this is wonderful. It's a great moment because Vincent has his head down. He's like, has his head buried. He's known he's lost, but he looks up and he's smirking like with ultimate respect for Eddie in this moment. And Eddie just looks at him and goes, human moves, kid. You study the watch, but I study you. You get the check. Excuse me. Does it get any cooler? And what's great is that Eddie leaves the bar with the brunette and we find out that Eddie had previous knowledge of this brunette. He knew her from before. They're friends. He even knew the guy that was at the end of the bar and asks about him. He had it played out from the beginning. He had it all set up. And that's the key. That's what it's all about. And you can't beat a guy like that. He's got the cards all stacked. It's just a beautiful scene. Wonderful performances. So that was my second favorite scene.
Yeah. So going back to my first favorite scene.
Yeah.
I think what I loved about it is when I first watched this, I was exactly like Harmon. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't get it. And then tying it into the dinner scene, it makes perfect sense. It's make yourself an unknown. That way we can hustle. You go out there and be braggadocious and beat the shit out of everyone. You're not going to make any money. But if you're the unknown there at the table, that's when we can hustle people and score big. And that dinner scene, I don't know what it is. I just love that shot of Newman coming up to the table, approaching Carmen and Vincent. And he's got his hands by his side. And he almost does like the double shooter at him.
That's right. He gives him the finger guns.
The finger guns. And then opens his wallet, takes out a 10, literally sticks it in Carmen's dessert. He's like, I'll take care of the taxi for you. And then walks out. And I'm like, damn, that's a way to leave a presence and make you think, all right, maybe I should team up this guy and find out more what's going on.
That's the first lesson, isn't it? It's about human moves. The thing is that Vincent's paying attention to the wrong thing. He's asking the wrong questions. He's noticing the wrong things. He's saying it's just a game with stick and balls. That's it. And Eddie's like, oh no, there's so much more. You're missing the point. You're missing the value of this, and I'm going to teach you. And here's the first lesson about human moves, because here it is, case in point. Vincent's looking at the watch and Eddie is playing the man. He's playing Vincent. Great stuff.
Yeah. So for my next favorite scene, it's kind of a jump. So Eddie ends up manipulating Vincent and Carmen into going on this trip to Atlantic City. There's going to be a pool tournament and they'll maybe about 5 weeks hit area pool halls, and Eddie will teach Vincent and Carmen how to hustle. And Vincent's not so sure about this, but he uses Carmen as a piece to get Vincent to go, saying, because Vincent works at like a toy store.
Child World.
That's what it is.
That's so great.
And says, you know, Carmen's going to lose interest if this is the way your life's going to roll from here on out. If I can make you some big money. So he puts a little doubt. He realizes that Carmen is the key to get Vincent to do what he needs. And he even invites Vincent over to his bar. I'm not even sure if it's his bar, but then has Carmen do certain things that makes Vincent uptight that maybe Carmen is going to leave him. And then boom, now they're on the road. And through this whole trip, Eddie's trying to teach Vincent how to make real money playing pool. Not, you can't just go in and beat the best people. You got to drop a couple games here and there, get people to not know that you're that good, and then they want to play you, and then you hustle them, and bang, and that's where all the big money is. So Vince is getting it. They're starting to really hustle, and they're starting to make headway. So they're about three weeks out from the tournament, and they go to this pool hall, and you see the three of them enter, and it's a great shot of the three of them entering, and we hear Eddie go, do you smell that? And Vincent right away, still naive, though, but, and he goes, what, smoke? And Carmen, who's caught on pretty early what all this is about, she's like, no, money. So here they go. They really hope they're going to hit this pool up for some serious cash. But while Eddie walks around the pool hall, he notices Grady Seasons. Grady Seasons is supposed to be one of the best pool players, nine ball players in the business. And he is going to be out of Atlantic City. So Eddie realizes, okay, we can actually use this to our advantage. And he brings Vincent over and he's like, hey, that's Grady Stevens. He's going to be playing in the pool tournament. He's like, I want you to play him. But I want you to lose. And of course, Vincent hates losing, but he understands usually why they should do this. But he's like, wait, if I'm playing such a great player, I want to beat the shit out of him. And that's when Carmen goes, no, you want to lose to him, because then when we get to Atlantic City, your odds will drop, making it a better payout when you end up hopefully winning the nine ball tournament. Yeah, short term, this sucks. Long term, it's a big payoff. That's why we're doing this. Long term, you got to think long term. So he's like, all right, fine. So he starts playing Grady and he's losing. He's doing exactly what he's doing. He's dumping games. He's dumping games. But then Grady starts needling him a little bit at one point. It's like, oh, worst nightmare, kid, huh? Then Grady's hitting shot after shot. And he's like, oh, this nightmare must be getting worse, huh? Must be getting worse. And then we get to a point where Vincent's almost at his breaking point. And he goes to hit a shot. And Grady says to Vincent, well, hope you don't choke on that easy shot. And it's not an easy shot at all. He's got to bank it at least twice to get it in. And Vincent looks at him and is like, are you telling me not to choke? And Grady just kind of laughs. So then Vincent, boom, puts that shot in, puts the next one in, puts the next one in. And then you can see Eddie there watching the game going, oh, fuck, here we go. And now they're playing back and forth, back and forth. They're playing a couple more games. Grady's winning some. Vincent's winning some. Now Vincent's taking over. He's starting to win. And you can just see Eddie there and like, this fucking kid, man, just cannot learn a lesson. And then Carmen's watching and she looks over at Eddie and knows exactly what he's thinking. And she gets up, walks over to Vincent and kind of gives him a loving embrace. And Vincent's like, Carmen, I'm trying to play here. Don't make me lose my concentration. This is great because then Carmen just whispers to Vincent, you win one more game, you're going to be humping your fist for a long time. Got that, Vincent? And then gives him a kiss, like suck it on the bottom of his lip, and then just turns and walks off. And just the look on Vincent's face, like, oh, fuck, she's totally right. And then she sits down and looks over at Eddie. Are you going to do something besides just sit there and meditate? And it's just great because when she says that to him, Eddie just kind of leans back and it's like, all right, she's got everything under control. So he's got her exactly where he needs her to be to make sure that she can control Vincent from there on. I just love that when she just comes up to him and just says that line, knock it off. You're not playing the game correctly.
That's a fantastic scene. It's wonderful. So much of it is in the looks. It's in the looks when you're watching Eddie, watching Vincent play Grady Seasons, the all-time moneymaker. Grady Seasons, here he is for the taking. But in this scenario, he's there to lose to. And I love that aspect of this, the fact that that's the strategy. That's something you learn from this movie and you pick up on. It's so cool. You know, there's the side betting. But to set yourself up for the Nine Ball Classic in Atlantic City as a long shot by losing now. You're playing, this is the long con that you're involved in. You're playing for the long-term goal. And it takes discipline, it takes patience, neither of which Vincent has. And Grady Seasons, wonderfully played here by Keith McCready, a real pool professional. And there's a lot of pool professionals that make cameos in this. I just looked up Keith McCready. He had the nickname Earthquake. At one time considered among the top players in America, McCready has been a traveling tournament competitor and notorious hustler since the 1970s. And he is slimy in this role as Grady Seasons, yeah, when he is just goading Vincent. And it works. And it's interesting because this is going to get into now my next favorite scene. This leads right up to my next favorite scene, which I'm calling Eddie Gets Hustled by Amos. But just talking about the scene with Grady Seasons a little more, when we're watching Eddie look on as Vincent is supposed to dump, he's supposed to dump this game, but he can't take the goading by Grady Seasons. And then he starts to win. And that's not the right strategy. And both Eddie and Carmen can see this. Can't really do anything about it until Carmen takes control. But I read in my research and such, there's another take on this that I found fascinating, that while not just Eddie is just watching Vincent, instead of throwing the game, he's winning and he's not doing what he's supposed to do and being disappointed by the situation, Eddie's wheels are turning in a different way. I thought this was interesting because he's actually watching this all unfold and continuing to fall in love with this game, knowing he could do this. He might be able to beat Grady Seasons. And he's had enough of playing the role of mentor and teacher. It's time for him to get back into the game. And that's what leads into my next favorite scene, because after this scene with Grady Seasons and Vincent is actually able to dump in the end and throw it away properly, thanks to Carmen, it cuts back to the hotel room here on this road trip. And Now, Eddie comes knocking on the hotel room door and asks for the Balabushka that he had previously given to Vincent. And Vincent's like, what's going on? Where are you going? He's like, oh, I'm going to go out and play a little bit. And he's like, yeah, where are you going? He's like, oh, I'm going to go to Gunter's, which is a local pool hall. So now Eddie's got the bug again. He's got his Balabushka in hand, and he goes over to the Gunter's pool hall and immediately walks up the stairs, looks around. Nobody's playing at the tables. And what does he do? He pulls out a $100 bill and just puts it on the table because that's all he needs to do. He knows this is just all the subtle shit in this that I love, because he puts it on the table and immediately somebody at the bar sees it and it gets his attention. And he tells the bartender, hey, call so-and-so, call him in. And the games begin, because now the players start showing up. And this is Eddie getting his groove back. He's playing, he's hustling, he's taking money off people. And all the while, he's down in some JTS brown bourbon. He's just drink after drink. And then he's playing a young, tall African-American man named Amos. And this is just wonderfully portrayed by Forrest Whitaker. Great to see Forrest Whitaker in this. And Amos, while playing pool against Eddie, is telling this story about how, you know, he was at one time just struggling for work and he was having trouble with his girl. And he ended up being a subject for shock therapy at a university just to make a little extra money. And meanwhile, he's losing bad to Eddie, and they're going $80 a rack, and then they go double or nothing. And Eddie's just reveling in it because he's feeling it and he's drinking more. He's just pounding that alcohol. And then all of a sudden things turn. Amos starts going on a winning streak. And then Eddie catches on and he just stops and he walks right up to Amos and goes, Amos, are you a hustler? And here are some of the lines here. And Amos says, you know, man, because he's just pretending like he's just gone on this incredible winning streak. And he's like, this is luck, man. I'm really sorry. There's nothing I can do. That man, nine ball fell. I can't believe it. Eddie's like, are you a hustler, Amos? And he says, come on, Eddie, man, it's just luck. And Eddie says, are you a hustler? Amos says, hey, you don't want to pay me? Keep it. Forget it. I don't want no bad feelings when the big guy loses. Man, I lost. I paid. I don't. And Eddie says, are you a hustler, Amos? And Eddie knows he just got hustled. Amos won't actually say it, but it's understood. And there's this great part before Amos sinks the last nine ball of the last game. You see Eddie unscrewing his Balabushka pool cue and putting it back in the case and putting the money on the table because he knows Amos has won, and he gives up. And man, Paul Newman in this moment just goes from the coolest, utmost confident player getting his groove back to just completely dejected and shamed. And Amos, Forrest Whitaker, looks at him, talk about like pouring salt on the wound, and just goes, hey, Eddie, I want to ask you something, man. I want you to be real honest. Do you think I need to lose some weight? It's just great. Eddie turns and leaves, and he walks off to the side and says, he's just absolutely distraught, embarrassed, ashamed of himself for being suckered for what he calls showing his ass. And he's talking out loud to himself, and he begins sobbing as he's pounding against the wall, and he's playing it back in his mind as he's talking out loud. And he says he's seeing where he missed the signals of being hustled. And now Carmen and Vincent have shown up in the midst of this. So they have been standing aside watching this unfold. So they're there and they try to console Eddie, but Eddie's just like, it's over. After the scene with Grady Seasons and after this just happened, he's like, you know what? I'm going to give you enough money to go it on your own. He's like, I've shown my ass in front of you. What else do you need? That's your final lesson. Here's $2,000. You go on the road, you play some more pool halls, you hustle a little more, get a couple more grand together. You're good to play in Atlantic City. You'll get there. You'll be fine. And Vincent freaks out. He's like, you're going to dump us now? You're going to leave us now? He's like, that's it. I've taught you everything you need to know. And they have a big argument on the stairwell. Vincent freaks out, takes the Balabushka case and throws it down. And it's all going to shit in this moment because Eddie, he got hustled. The hustler got hustled. And there's just some great performances. And it's really hard to watch. It's hard to even call this a favorite scene. I was talking about this with Bill offline. And Bill's like, yeah, I love that scene, but it kind of hurts. This one stings. I don't like watching Eddie get served in this scene, but the performance is great. And man, Forrest Whitaker, I remember watching this the first time going, I didn't see it coming. He got me. He plays this innocent victim talking about being a subject of shock therapy. at a university to make money, and you're sympathetic towards this character, and he's working Eddie the whole time and takes him for all the money. It's fantastic. It's like, that's how you do it. And Eddie got caught in it, and he's a little rougher on the edges, and he knows he's not totally back, and it breaks him. It almost breaks him, but it doesn't all the way. And after that, he's like, okay, I got to get my shit together, get my eyes fixed and all that in order to, I got to brush up my game, and he has to practice more. That's what it does. It's a wake up call for Eddie is what it is. So fantastic scene.
Yeah. It's a fantastic scene that I hate. Not in a bad way. And even though Eddie is a hustler, I don't like to see him like that at the end of the scene. And I think that line is used in The Hustler when he asks about the weight. So I think that's really what sets Eddie off, because when he played Minnesota Fats in The Hustler the first time and loses, I think that line said to him. So
it's a callback. I got you. That's cool.
So that even makes more sense why he gets as distraught as he does and basically ends up dumping Vincent and Carmen at that point and says, you guys are on your own. I gave you the last lesson. But yeah, it's a good one, because here you are. He's been killing it all day. And I think that's kind of why Vincent and Carmen show up, because he's been gone for so long. So they kind of want to see, like, damn, he's been gone a couple hours playing pool. And unfortunately, they show up right in the middle of him getting taken by Amos. So not as he get taken, he almost feels embarrassed now that all the lessons that he's taught Carmen and Vincent have blown up in his face. Like, he couldn't even find the sign. So I hate the scene, but I love the scene at the same time. It's a super memorable scene in the movie.
Absolutely, man. Well, I've got a couple other just brief scenes and moments just to call out briefly, and I'm not going to go into them, but you know, as our listeners know, for time's sake, we just can't cover everything here. But that was it for my major favorite scenes. What about you, Bill Bent?
Yeah, major scenes is fine. Everything else is kind of moments from here on out, and I think we both probably have the exact same moments throughout the movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great pool playing scenes here, and although we're not learning how to play pool in this movie, you're just attracted to the game itself, just watching the balls roll and watching these players play at such a high level. And one of the scenes that takes place before the Grady Seasons sequence is this scene with Vincent playing Moselle, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, takes place at Chalkies, the pool hall Chalkies. And it's just one of those scenes. Again, I mentioned it early on. This is early example of Vincent screwing up, because he's supposed to lose to Moselle, who is this big African-American dude who's a badass, and he's like the reigning king moneymaker at this local pool hall. And Vincent wants to take him down, but he should lose to him so that Vincent remains as an unknown and nobody can call him out, and he's not putting a target on his back. So Vincent just can't stand it, though, and he goes over to Chalky's later on, and he ends up beating Moselle pretty bad. But that whole sequence is great, because he's wearing his T-shirt that says Vince on it. That's the shirt he wore when he was working at Child World, and Eddie told him to keep it because it just makes him look like a showboat and a flake and all that stuff. And so he's wearing that shirt. The great song Werewolves of London by, is it Warren Zevon that sings that, or Warren Zevon? And so you got the classic tune, and you just got Tom Cruise going off, twirling his pool cue. The music's great. Some great shots of the pool play. And yeah, that's just a kick-ass scene. And then the other one, brief moment I'm just going to call out, is the very end. Because spoiler alert, the Nine Ball Classic happens at Atlantic City. And the student has become the master. And Vincent ends up basically dumping his game with Eddie. They play one another, student and master, and student takes advantage of the master unbeknownst to the master, and Eddie is a bit embarrassed by that and wants to play Vincent straight up after that in the local pool room. And Vincent's like, hey, what if happens if I kick your ass? Because they're going to play straight up one-on-one to see who's the best at this point. Vincent's like, hey, Eddie, what if I kick your ass? And Eddie says, well, I'm just going to get right up and let you kick it again. And they play to see who's going to break first. And it's just the classic moment with Paul Newman about to break. And he says, hey, I'm back. And it's a great freeze frame. It's a wonderful smile on Paul Newman's face. That's where the movie ends. And that main title music comes right back in again. It's a great bookend with the music. Awesome. Classic final shot of a movie.
Yeah, one other moment that I love watching it the first time, and then in subsequent watches, I'm like, oh man. So, you know, they get to Atlantic City, and Vincent and Eddie are both playing. They get to the point where they have to play each other, and Eddie wins. And you're like, all right, good for Eddie. And he's walking out of the main pool hall, and he goes outside. And just does that like fist pump, like, yeah, I got him. Awesome. And, you know, you're excited for him. But then you find out that Vincent dumped the game. Yeah. Every time I see that fist pump, I'm just like, oh, that hurts so much. Because you're going to find out the next scene that Vincent dumped. And there you were, so excited. You're working so hard to get back. And it technically fell short. That love of the game is right there in that fist pump.
Oh, it's the juice.
Yep.
And you nailed it. This you made me realize this movie just has real highs and lows. It has some real highs and lows. And I'll just call out one more moment you made me think of early on in the film when they're on the road and they're going to their first pool hall and Eddie's going to start mentoring Vincent. And they're walking up this stairwell and Eddie stops Carmen and Vincent and goes, I got goosebumps, because he's got that chill. He's got the magic is back. He's got that feeling. They're walking into that pool hall because he knows the feel of it, the smell of it, the sound of it, everything. It's all coming back and he's going back into the world and they walk up the stairs and there's no more pool hall. It's been changed into like a used furniture store or warehouse of some kind.
Yeah.
But none of the tables are there anymore. And they just have to turn around and leave. And of course, Vincent and Carmen are making fun of him, razzing him a little bit about it. It's just, again, highs and lows. This movie's a lot of highs and lows.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, Bill Band here from the All 80s Movies podcast to tell you about Factor Meals. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Head to factormeals.com/80smovies50 and use code 80smovies50 to get 50% off. That's code 80smovies50 at factormeals.com/80smovies50 to get your 50% off today.
All right, let's move on to Swiss Cheese and Complaints Department. And why do we call it Swiss Cheese?
Because although this movie is delicious, it does have 9-ball pocket holes.
Yes, if it doesn't have those 9-ball pocket holes, we just file a complaint with the complaints department. All right, Jason, what do you have for Swiss cheese and complaints?
Barely anything. Almost nothing. I was trying to come up with something, and nothing jumped out at me. I found myself at the end of this rewatch going, well, I love this movie. That was really cool. I'm immersed in this world now. Oh, yeah, I have to come up with some complaints. No, the movie just cruised by. I like everything about this movie. Thinking back, if there was one slight thing, it might have to do with the character of Janelle, sort of. I wish she was in it a little more, maybe. I don't know if that would serve the story better. This relationship, this more mature relationship that Eddie Felsen is trying to have with this woman and how she deals with him and his way of behaving, because he's putting off this Bahama trip that he promised they were going to go on, and he's now getting back into this world of playing pool and hustling, and that's a lifestyle unto its own. So I don't know if do we need more. I don't know that. I was like, oh, maybe that needed to be more developed. But obviously that's a half-assed nitpick, as you can hear in my voice. I have no complaints, man. I got nothing. What do you got, Bill Bant?
I would have actually liked to see Janelle and Carmen have a little girl talk scene together. I kind of felt
that's a good call.
Bummed out we didn't get that. Complaints also, I was having a hard time. I'm still not 100% sure what Eddie currently does. Like, I understand he sells alcohol, but then we have that scene when he invites Vincent to the bar and then he's like, oh, I'll be in my office. But I'm like, wait, is that your bar? and then you sell. Not that it was a big deal, but I was still trying to find out exactly what he did. He's a liquor salesman, but where is he based out of? And then he could just take 6 weeks off.
I totally get it, man. I totally get it. He
it's not, this is not a major complaint, but I was just
that was a slightly confusing to me as well, was location. Mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly where they were specifically. In the research, you find out it's Chicago is where they start. I had that in my additional
Chicago
questions.
Okay. Yeah.
Initially, but then I found out, oh, it's Chicago is where they start. That's where all everything is happening, whether it be the bar that Janelle works at and they have pool tables. And that's where Eddie's trying to sell the cheap whiskey to her. I believe like he's a wholesale liquor salesman, right?
Right.
Like he's trying to sell cheap liquor at a discount that bar owners. And this does happen, unfortunately, that they will mix the cheap liquor in with the more expensive liquor to save a buck. And Janelle even asks Eddie for Wild Turkey labels. They're relabeling the bottles.
Right.
So that the customer doesn't realize they're drinking the cheap stuff, because this Old MacDonald happens to be flavorful enough to pass as Wild Turkey, which is already like bottom shelf whiskey. But still, great question. It's like, okay, how does his actual business of being a liquor salesman work, and where is he working out of exactly? It's not made very clear. I agree. That was in the back of my mind, too.
Yeah, but you could already see how we're reaching it. And the only other thing, and it's a moment. I love the moment, too, when they go to the first pool hall and it's not a pool hall. But I'm like, they would have known right away as soon as they got to the foot of the stairs, because there's just that sound, that smoky smell. Anytime you go into a pool hall, you would know right away walking in that there was something off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They always got the rock music playing. They had in all the pool halls throughout, just a great soundtrack. So I think they would have caught on a little bit sooner before they got up there. But the payoff is worth it, though. And it is
right.
Kind of
that's a good call. I agree. Yeah, there's no presence of people there.
Yeah, that's all I got.
All right. Cool.
All right. Let's move on then to, hey, that's that actor.
All right.
So in this segment, we spotlight a character actor you have seen in many other films, an actor making their big screen debut, or an actor that makes an uncredited cameo. It's, hey, it's that actor. Who do we choose this week, Jason?
This week, we chose for our, hey, it's that actor, Bill Cobbs.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, right? Bill Cobbs, who plays the role of Orvis, owner, proprietor of Chalky's Pool Hall. Bill Cobbs, the man, the myth, the legend. He is an African-American character actor. That's just that likable grandfatherly type, man. He's the wise old man type. He's got that deep voice, slightly gravelly, often played older than his actual age over the years. And Bill Cobbs goes back to the mid 70s when he was in an episode of Good Times. And then he played a small role, I should say the small role of Mr. Jones in a movie called Greased Lightning. No relation to the movie Grease. The movie Greased Lightning is actually about the first black stock car racer driver. But he played the role of Mr. Jones in that. Anyway, moving on to the 80s, he's in a couple TV movies. He's the bartender in Trading Places. I believe we called him out on our podcast covering Trading Places because I was like, yeah, great to see Bill Cobbs.
Yep.
He makes an appearance in Silkwood, The Brother from Another Planet. He's Big Joe Eisen in The Cotton Club in 1984. He does Color Money here in 1986. He does a bunch of TV in between all of this. But then he's in Suspect. He's in Dominic and Eugene. You remember that movie? He's in Bird. He's also in The January Man alongside Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. After the 80s, he pops up in New Jack City, The Hard Way, The People Under the Stairs. I remember him in The Bodyguard with Kevin Costner. He's in Demolition Man, The Hudsucker Proxy with Paul Newman. He's in That Thing You Do. I got to mention this one film that he's in. He's in the film First Kid. I think he's the president's son in the movie, in the fiction of that movie. First Kid, the first kid in that movie is played by Brock Pierce. Brock Pierce, whom used to live in the same apartment complex that I did when I first moved to L.A. And I wanted to mention Brock Pierce just for Marwan, our friend Marwan Abdurzak. He'll know what I'm talking about. Back to Bill Cobbs. He also plays the role of Reginald in Night at the Museum, and he's also known as Master Tinker in Oz, The Great and Powerful. All right, you get it. Bill Cobbs, been in everything since the mid-70s. Bill Cobbs, he's 89 years old, still going. Wonderful character actor. He is our Hey, It's That Actor this week.
Yeah, Bill Cobbs, very small role in this movie. But yeah, the voice, and I can't put my finger, just the way he moves, I like.
He's tall, a little lanky, maybe.
Right. The way he would just walk across screen, I was like, that's just something just cool in the way he moves. I don't know. He's definitely someone, I would just love to sit on a patio,
exactly,
overlooking and just have a couple of drinks and just shoot the shit. Just
listen to his stories. You want to listen
exactly.
to his stories.
Oh, he would probably have so many great ones.
You get a sense that he's seen it all. And that's the kind of what he exudes here in this, playing the role of Orvis, being the proprietor of Chalky's Pool Hall, because he lends some credibility to the whole world of this. He goes way back. He knows Eddie Felsen from back in the day. They had a prior relationship and professional, and you get a little bit of that cool betting system. As I was talking about, what it means for Eddie to be a stake horse for Vincent. And then Bill Cobbs as Orvis is like, okay, I will let you guys play here. I'll let Vincent play for a table. And he charges them a fee, like $12 to play at a table. But then also he's going to take a percentage of what they make. You know, I'll only take 10% if you're playing Eddie. But then he realizes it's Vincent, this new kid. He's like, well, we'll do 15% because you're being staked by Eddie. And it's like, oh man, there's so much of this stuff. Like, you're like, what's going on here? This is a whole arrangement that has to happen for you to even get in. And you get that from Bill Cobbs in this movie, which is cool.
Yeah. I almost feel like Bill Cobbs is just playing himself in this movie.
Yeah. Right?
That's just how it comes across. Yep.
Yeah.
Time to move on to facts and trivia. What are some facts and trivia we have about The Color of Money?
All right. Well, if you were wondering, Tom Cruise did his own trick shots for the film, except for one in which he had to jump two balls to sink another. Martin Scorsese said he could have let Cruise learn that shot, but it would have taken two extra days of practice holding up production and costing thousands of dollars. The shot was instead performed by professional players Andrew Giatsidis and Michael Siegel.
I saw that name. I'm like, there's no way I'm pronouncing that one. Yeah. So
Giatsidis.
All right. So as I mentioned earlier in the pod, that this was based on a book. So the book differs a lot from the movie. So the novel is set in 1983. Eddie, now 50, runs a pool hall of his own in Lexington, Kentucky. He is long married, but getting a divorce, and his ex-wife has gained possession of the pool room and she is selling off its tables. Eddie is approached by a cable television production company to engage in a series of exhibition matches with Minnesota Fats from the original movie, who now lives in the Florida Keys. Fats dies from poor health during the tour, and Eddie travels playing nine ball with an English woman he met named Arabella. Eddie ends up getting cheated and beaten up during a pool game and quits to open an art store. The store is destroyed in a fire, so Eddie returns to pool playing in a nine-ball tournament in Lake Tahoe, winning the event.
Wow.
Nothing like the movie whatsoever.
Completely different.
I got to get my hands on this book then and check it out.
It sounds good. Sounds good, but yeah.
Woo. I think they did approach Jackie Gleason about being in it.
I was just going to say that. Paul Newman wanted Gleason back as Minnesota Fats.
Yeah.
But Gleason felt the character didn't fit into the new story, so he declined. Great stuff. Paul Newman said the best advice director Martin Scorsese gave him, especially in the humorous scenes, was try not to be funny.
There you go. Simple.
Gotten that direction before. It works.
While filming The Color of Money, Tom Cruise was called back to the set of Top Gun for reshoots. The scene that he had to reshoot had him and Kelly McGillis in an elevator. Both Tom and Kelly had changed their appearance enough since principal photography had concluded that they had to find ways to disguise the changes. Kelly had her hair tightly tucked into a baseball cap, and Tom appears in a towel with wet hair. They had to wet Tom's hair down to try to match Maverick's Navy haircut because he had grown it out to play Vince.
Love it. That I came across as well. I just don't know. That's cool, because now I'm going to watch Top Gun, and I'm going to think about it when I see that scene.
Oh, definitely.
Be like, oh, he was shooting Color of Money at this time.
Yeah.
Kelly McGillis was shooting something else as well. So that's interesting. And that scene always stands out to me because Kelly McGillis is wearing that cap in that scene. I'm like, oh, something different about her wearing that cap. Now I know what it is specifically. So good stuff. After the last shot of the Eddie Vincent game at the big tournament in Atlantic City, Paul Newman had all the extras playing the spectators stay in their seats. A few minutes later, a stack of Budweiser beer cases was brought in and shared. Budweiser was Paul Newman's sponsor for his Newman Haas racing team at the time.
So cool. So the majority of the Big Bowl tournament interiors that were supposed to be in Atlantic City were actually filmed in the big ballroom at the end of Navy Pier in Chicago.
Yeah.
Nice of the blend. Did not catch that at all.
That's great. Navy Pier in Chicago. It's great. Check it out if you have never been.
Never been.
Yeah. So legendary game developers John Carmack and John Romero revealed that this film, especially the exchange between Vincent and Moselle, was the source of the title of that huge video game, Doom, 1993. That's one of two trivia bits that I'm going to mention here from that scene with Moselle, that scene we called out with the great song Werewolves of London. But yeah, in that scene, there is that great quote when Moselle walks up to Vincent, who's holding the case with the Bella Bushka in it, and Moselle says, "What you got in there?" And Vincent just has that Tom Cruise smile come across his face and goes, "Oh, in here?" And he opens the case and he looks at him. Doom.
Awesome.
That's great. The second bit of trivia relating to that scene was that Bruce A. Young, the actor who plays Moselle, he's the man who challenges Vince to play when Eddie's back at the motel. Well, Bruce A. Young also plays the transvestite prostitute who arrives to Joel's house in Risky Business.
I love that. I did not catch that at all.
And now, well, I look back on it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's totally him. But it's like, I would have never thought that.
As soon as I read that, I was like, holy shit, it is him. But no, I would not have caught that just watching.
And it's a memorable moment in Risky Business.
Yeah.
With Tom Cruise playing the role of Joel when he answers the door. And there's that transvestite prostitute. That's at the beginning.
Yeah. And then he's like, here's the girl that you should call.
Right. Did you have anything else?
One last one.
Yeah.
So Martin Scorsese, as we know, does the opening narration of the movie. So he wasn't the only one of his family members in the film. So in Atlantic City Casino, the man walking a dog on a leash, the dog is Scorsese's dog, Zoe. And Zoe is in the credits as Dog Walk By.
There you go.
So Martin's always putting family members or himself in his films.
It's great.
All right, moving on to box office. The Color of Money was released on October 17th, 1986 in 635 theaters. On an estimated budget of $14.5 million, it grossed $52.3 million domestically. It debuted number two at the box office, just behind Crocodile Dundee, which was playing in twice as many theaters. It would hold the number two spot for the next 4 weeks behind Crocodile Dundee. The Color of Money would stay in the top 10 for an additional 4 weeks and would be the 12th highest grossing movie in the U.S., just ahead of Stand By Me by $6,000. So moving on to reviews, when growing up in the 80s, we would watch At the Movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert to hear the reviews and watch clips of upcoming movies. Their review of The Color of Money was unanimous. Two thumbs down. Roger found the movie to be a disappointment, lacking the drive and energy of most Martin Scorsese movies. The narrative Roger found to be predictable, and even though the performances from the main characters were strong, he didn't feel they connected. Gene thought the movie's issue was the script. There was nothing inventive about the script, and it made the movie predictable. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a tomato meter score of 88% with an audience score of 73%. It also has an IMDb rating of 7.0. Now, usually, Jason, when I write the reviews, I'll guess right away
right. What
they're going to say. And I put, was unanimous, two thumbs up.
Yeah.
And then I watched it and I was like, wow. First, I'm like, oh, okay, they split. And then even when Gene came on and piled on, I was like, holy crap. That was a total surprise to me.
I give a strong thumbs down to Siskel and Ebert's thumbs down.
I agree.
I couldn't disagree more. I don't find this film predictable at all. If it were predictable, I think Vincent would have made a turnaround much earlier in the film and would have learned from the master and then kick butt in the tournament. That's like a predictable, but that's not what happens at all. Vincent doesn't really show any growth, but then supposedly matures and actually... The first time I saw it, I didn't see that he was going to end up hustling the hustler. I guess if maybe I were a smarter viewer at the time, that would have been maybe slightly predictable because the movie is about hustling. But I don't know. I didn't think it was predictable.
Yeah, I think this is the biggest surprise I've ever had with doing that review segment.
I was really surprised to read that myself.
Okay, time to move on to additional thoughts and questions. What are some additional thoughts and questions we have about The Color of Money?
Well, just in general, Bill Bant, I was going to ask you, how is your pool game? Do you have any game? Have you, and also, have you ever played for money?
No, I've never played for money. Usually just play with friends. I haven't played pool in the longest time. And I was just away a couple days ago. I was literally looking up. I'm like, all right, I'm going to be out of town looking for pool halls to see if I can somehow fit it in. Never could. My game is average at best.
I'm right there with you, man. All I'm just going to share is that some of my fondest memories when I worked at the Black Cow Cafe in Montrose, California, down the street, was one of my favorite dive bars at all time. It was called Avignon's, but it was spelled A-V-I-O-G-N-E-S, Avignon's. Anyway, we would lovingly refer to it as Avignones instead of Avignon's. Regardless, you'd go in and it was all red and it smelled of cigarette smoke, and it was just wonderful. And it had, I believe it had two pool tables. And all we would do after we got off our shift at the restaurant, we just walk on down to Avignon's and get our beers, our drinks. And I was smoking cigarettes. And they had one of those old cigarette machines where you actually pull the handle to have the cigarette pack drop down into the slot so you can pull it out. They had a jukebox. So my buddy Ron would always play the same songs by Queen in the background. We'd have Queen and Van Halen always rocking in the background. So this is late 90s, early 2000s, and we'd shoot pool and we'd play teams. We'd play one-on-one. And the more I drank, the looser I got and the better I'd play. And the more drunk I got, the worse I got. So I had to find that sweet, sweet spot. Like two beers in, I was playing okay. But like you, I was average as best. But it was just about hanging out with friends and having fun and knowing that we're going to Avignon's to get relaxed, to get a little buzzed, and to play some pool with some good tunes. And it's just with the cigarette smoke, the pool, the music, I get it. It's alluring. It's alluring. And it was fun playing with the girls too and just laughing, being silly, and sometimes hitting a good shot and feeling the thrill of getting that one good shot out of the 10 games we play.
And then, yeah, I'd be playing that bit. One time you'd have to get the bridge and it would never work right. You can never use the bridge correctly.
Oh, yeah.
But the cigarette, oh my God, every pool hall I ever walked into always had that cigarette machine right out in front.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a memory. Not that I ever smoked, but I've got
it's
that.
A scene. It's a whole scene. Yeah. The bridge. I forgot about bridge.
Yep. Question for you. I thought about this probably after the third watch. The title of the movie, Color of Money, does that do it for you?
In retrospect, that's a great question. And I was sort of thinking about that when I was talking about that this is The Hustler 2, right? The Hustler Part 2. And I understand, you know, one of the major themes here in the movie is all about money. I mean, it's Eddie Felsen specifically and distinctly says that it's, make no mistake, it's about the man who has the most, whoever has the most money. That's all that matters. So much of it is about the green color of money. But now, after really paying attention to this movie and digesting it, it doesn't really do it for me. I'm not crazy about the title. I don't know if The Hustler Part 2, that's not wonderful either. It's not very original. Just made me think of the end of True Romance. So I don't know. What do you have a substitute title? You think of a better title offhand?
No, you know when I write stuff, I cannot come up with good titles. That's always my weakest point, is trying to come up with titles for anything that I write or scripts. But I think after I read what the novel was about, and it was such, deviated so much from the movie, I was like, why did you keep the title then? But I couldn't think, because, yeah, then, you know, these play on words with pool or any of that kind of stuff. And I was like, eh. Yeah, I'm not in love with The Color of Money, but I couldn't think of a better option.
What about Human Moves? I don't know. I'm trying to think of.
I'm trying to come up with something off the cuff.
Eddie says in that dinner sequence in the beginning when he says, that's my area of excellence.
Right.
Human Moves.
I don't know. If anybody's got a better title, let us know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, listeners, send in your alternate titles for The Color of Money.
Yeah. So I got to shout out the soundtrack. I had to get it because I love this just because of Eric Clapton, and Robert Palmer is one of my favorite 80s artists. And
Don Henley.
Yeah, and one of his Robert Palmer's song plays during the gravy scene. That's what they're playing, that one in the background. You got B.B. King on there, you know, Werewolves in London, but it does not have the Phil Collins song.
No.
It does not have One More Night. That's the only disappointment.
Yeah.
But it's one I used to listen to all, especially we would play that when we were playing pool at the house. I'd always have that soundtrack on.
Oh, yeah, man. It's a must have. I mean, it's fantastic music. I mean, Scorsese always has the best songs, though. He's always got the classic rock going. It's just part of his filmmaking process. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another broad question. Favorite Paul Newman performance and or film?
I would say, I think my top two, the one I've probably watched the most, I would put it up as like one of the best sports movies of all time, is Slapshot.
Yeah.
I love Slapshot. I remember watching that as a kid with my parents and just crying throughout it, even though, you know, some of the stuff in there is not for kids. But just going back and watching that one every once in a while. Oh, I love that one.
I don't think I've ever seen the film all the way through. I've definitely seen parts and clips out of order. But I know for a fact, just from listening to enough film discussion over the years and sports discussions over the years, there's no question the people of our generation and probably the generation before, you know, a decade or two before we were even born, are big fans of that movie. They put Slapshot in probably the top five, if not at least top 10 sports movies of all time.
Oh, yeah.
That movie is adored.
It's a lot of fun. And then the other one I would go with is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I mean, probably is a staple answer for him, but him and Redford and that's a lot of fun.
That's my choice. I remember watching that with my dad a long, long time ago. And if you just watch a clip from that film on YouTube right now, which I encourage you to do, they're just two of the coolest freaking actors of all time and still to this day. And they had such wonderful chemistry. It's a wonderful partnership.
Oh, yeah.
That being I'm talking about Paul Newman and Robert Redford, of course. And you're like, oh, this is what movie stars used to be like. No knock against the movie stars of today. We've got a whole new generation of movie stars coming up now. But still, it's like they're so magnetic. And Paul Newman, obviously a supremely handsome guy. And he's just got those eyes, those cool blue eyes, you know. What can you say? Smooth character. So Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, just great all-time Western and one of the best endings to a movie of all time. Another freeze frame. How about that?
Yeah.
The end of that movie. Classic freeze frame ending. But I also implore people to watch Paul Newman in Road to Perdition. That's a cult favorite of mine. I do like that Tom Hanks film. Sam Mendes directed a great Chicago movie. Period piece. And Paul Newman plays the head of a crime family in that. And the sequence where, spoiler alert, fast forward 30 seconds if you don't want to know what happens to Paul Newman in that film, but his death scene and or sequence is amazing filmmaking. Just that scene alone, when you have Tom Hanks approaching him with the Tommy gun out of the darkness and in the midst of the rain. It's amazing. So love me some Paul Newman for sure. Did you have any other questions?
Just last one,
yeah.
Since we're talking about Martin Scorsese, you have a favorite Martin Scorsese movie?
Going back over, gosh, his filmography, it's obvious, it's easy. I have to go with Goodfellas. It's probably up there in the top three most rewatchable movies of all time. It's a movie, just, we often say this, but if you come across it on TV or on your device, you got to watch it. You got to watch some of it. You're going to be spending time with it. So just know that. That's just what are the, you know, next to The Godfather, the greatest mafia movie there's ever been created. So, or mob movie, you know. What about you, Bill Bant?
I'm a really big fan of Raging Bull.
Sure.
I think most of his movies,
there's no wrong answer here. I mean, it's like at all.
Like he makes so many great movies. But I think, Goodfellas is a good example. So I don't feel like there's ones that I'm never going to be like, oh, yeah, I feel like watching Taxi Driver today, you know?
Because right.
His movies are so dark. It's like, but Raging Bull is one like I can watch over and over again. And it's certainly one I'm looking forward to doing on the show. And most people do consider it one of the best movies of the decade. Yeah, I have to go Raging Bull. And then I went and saw Hugo.
Oh, really? Yeah.
In the theater in 3D. And that one I really had a lot of fun with. Not saying it's cool. One of his best ones, but I really it was so out of the box for Martin Scorsese. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really enjoyable. So just a shout out to Hugo. Not saying it's my favorite. Not saying it's his best movie. So don't write in and go, like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I can name 15 movies in between Raging Bull and Hugo. But seeing it in that format, because the movie really is an homage to the wonders of filmmaking. I was like, oh, I'm glad I saw this in the theater. In 3D on a big screen.
That's a great shout out. And I will say this much as I adore Goodfellas, The Wolf of Wall Street is really addictive for me. That's another one. It's not my favorite Scorsese movie, but it's up there as far as just, it's just a blast to watch. It's just a rock and roll kind of movie. I find it very entertaining.
See, he kills me with these 3 hour plus movies. I'm like, I don't have time to sit down and watch them. I have that movie. I have not watched it yet. I own it. I've not watched it yet.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, I'm always like, oh, I want to watch it. And I'm like, oh, it's like 10:30 and I'm going to fall asleep. So I got to get to this earlier. And then it just doesn't happen. Yeah, I probably had the movie for a year and a half and still have not seen it yet.
All right. We'll talk about it once you do see it.
Yes, hopefully that is soon. All right, let's move on to ratings. So on a scale of 1 to 5 pool cues, what do you give The Color of Money?
I'm going all in. Rack 'em. 5 pool cues for me.
Damn.
Yeah, I was wavering. It's going to either be 4.5 or 5, but I'm going for it. This movie is sexy cool. It's a vibe. It's a scene, as I mentioned. It appeals to all the senses. I'm engrossed in this world, and I want to learn more about it because of this movie. I want to hear all the stories about the people that move in and out of this world because of this movie. This movie is the writing and the performances and the visual style of Martin Scorsese. I get it why this was nominated for art direction. I mean, it makes me want to go back and see the original. I think Tom Cruise is probably underrated for his performance in this. It cements Paul Newman as maybe the coolest actor ever. He's got it all. He's 61 years old in this, and I would kill to look like that at 61, much less have an ounce of talent that guy does. I mean, it seems a little odd that he only won one Oscar. When Paul Newman, and this is a little bit of trivia, when he won the Best Actor Oscar for this picture, he and wife Joanne Woodward became the first married couple to win his and hers Oscars since Vivien Leigh and Laurence Olivier. Newman's win also came after he had already received an honorary Oscar statuette the previous year. The win was widely considered, based on sentimentality and guilt, that one of Hollywood's leading male actors had never won. So there you go. And to anyone who that's not familiar with his early work, I implore you to check it out, that being Paul Newman. But the bottom line is, I like thinking about this movie. It was just fun thinking about it and thinking about what I was going to write about and talk about. I like thinking about what it's about. I think I can draw parallels to my own life as an actor trying to get back into the world and back into the game. It made me think about myself, too. Anyway, again, I like the feel of it, and I'll keep returning to get that feel time and time again. The movie only gets finer with age. 5 pool cues for me. What about you, Bill Bant?
5, man. I gave it 4 pool cues. Performances are great. See, what I like about it, even though Siskel and Ebert were complaining about it, that the script is simple. The story's kind of simple. It's like he takes someone under his wing and goes on this trip to Atlantic City to enter a 9-ball tournament. But there's always that whole hustle that goes from beginning to end also, which I like. So I think there's enough twists and turns throughout that makes it interesting. And then just learning about the other side of how we would play pool, just go and have friendly, hang out with your friends and not the whole gambling aspect of making money off of playing pool. So that I found very fascinating. So for me, yeah, it's a solid 4.
Awesome.
All right. I think that about wraps it up for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please take the time to follow us on your preferred streaming platform, give us a review, and rate us. If you want to learn more about our show, you can visit us at all80smoviespodcast.com. For our next episode, we will be discussing Brainstorm, starring Christopher Walken, Natalie Wood, and Louise Fletcher. We hope you can join us. Have an excellent week, everyone.
It doesn't make any sense. It goes in streaks. The balls roll funny for everybody, kiddo. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, world.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.